Hi everyone, we're back. Today we're going to talk about chapter 4, 5, and 6. So basically in chapter 4, the author says that a difference is a difference and if it makes a difference. He basically explores the concepts of error and ranges to show that at times difference between numbers are made to mean more than they do. And
it's interesting because he talked about like how he gave an example of like a graph when like there were like all of the numbers you needed to know were shown on the graph, and then the same graph when like the numbers weren't shown, and how like there's this illusion of like the percentage or whatever was like increasing by like much more than it actually was, because the line was just like going up. So you actually, you know, perceive the idea in a different way when like you're not given all of the pieces of information that you need to know. And I feel like, you know, that's I guess that would be a smart way to lie to people. Uh-huh. Like, and I think we are being lied to that way in like all kinds of fields, like I don't know, business, politics, like if like if for example like they show you a graph of like how many more people have jobs or whatever, mm-hmm. and they don't really show you the detailed information, meaning like the exact numbers, they just show you like the graph, you're gonna be like, whoa, like so many more people have jobs in like Obama's administration in comparison to like, I don't know, Truman's administration
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, that's true though.
But then like, well, I don't know about that. But I guess the point is like, when you don't have like all of the information you need, like you're just gonna make bad decisions.
Yeah, and on top of that, in chapter 4, he says that like sometimes the result of a sample, they're like very close together, and the difference between them are like, it's meaningless, and because the range of the probable error may be like greater than the difference between results. And he also like talks about one example of measuring the size of a cornfield, and tells us that like each test comes with a percentage of probable error, and while doing any comparison between two may come with like very small differences. And the measure wouldn't give a precise figure, rather gives us a range with a probable error. And do you remember the example of Yale? Like, he talks about like how like he makes a generalization that
that was like in the first
chapter. It's also in chapter 4.
Oh.
That like a student who would attend Yale would make like $25,000 per year.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that the income of a specific group cannot be known specifically. I mean, like even if the income is so, there must be like any other sources of income, like rather than just a job. Like I don't think that one specific, like they make $25,000 per year. That I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Like they have like more, like more ways of making money, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I totally agree with you and the author. And I guess with that, we go to talking about bias when, you know, doing experiments or, like, deciding what kind of sample you want to use or whatever. And the author, you know, mentioned how, like, the pure random sample is the best way, you know, to get, like, the least amount of errors in your results. However, you know, it costs a lot of money. So that's why, like, a lot of people wouldn't use that because they don't have, you know, the finances to do that. So they do a clustered sample instead. And I guess another problem also when, like, choosing samples is, like, as I said, being, like, biased or whatever. And another example he gave was, like, that woman who wanted to do some experiment that I don't remember exactly, but then she wanted to like ask people at a train station or something because she thought like everyone would be included and, you know, there wouldn't be people who wouldn't be there But the author mentioned how, like, women with, like, the little children or whatever wouldn't be there. Therefore, that group wouldn't be represented, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I guess the problem with that is also, like, not representing everyone.
Yeah.
That,
you know. And for our old podcast, Mr. Maz, he made a comment and, like, gave us an article. And it says, like, how to lie with data visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, like, talks about, like errors in the data and stuff like that. And I think the article is, like, really interesting. It makes you wonder, like, why stuff like this matter and why it should be taught in high schools. Because, like, we need to understand, like, these, like, some of those data are making us fool, you know? Like, you don't actually see that. You don't see the actual picture, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, throughout the book, like, even mentioning, like, the other chapters we talked about before, you know, and we said this in, like, our previous podcast, like, statistics is, now, I think it's, like, a very, very important thing to be, you know, to have knowledge about, because now that I'm thinking about it, it's, like, we're lied to everywhere. It's, like, media, politics, business, economy.
Yeah. It's pretty much everywhere.
Maybe school. I don't know.
Yeah, and also there's a quote in the book, and Mr. Maz also talked about it, like, a river cannot rise above its source. And
sometimes it can.
to me, I guess it means, like, you can get something more out of what you already have, and which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, like, we're able to get away, like, more information than we've been told, you know, and the saying like, a river cannot rise above its source, it can be true all the time, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about chapter 5.
All
right. So in chapter 5, the author says that the statistics are like merely a number. And most people are bound to, like, find them boring, you know. So if you plot all the numbers and against the two axes of a graph, the result would be a diagram, you know, a line or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, question arises over here, like, how do you make that graph more interesting and more appealing?
I don't know. I guess because, like, graphs are visual, I wouldn't really kind of relate to that, sort of. I don't know, just because, like, they're, like, visual, I don't know, like, and, you know, because,
yeah,
I have visual disability and stuff, like, I don't really.
Yeah, you're true. I think, like, it makes us easy for anyone to look at the pictures and understand what's going on, and, like, it makes the numbers, like, comprehensive and makes us easy for us to, like, understand what's going on in the problem or in the situation. And the author also talks about, like how some people make graphs more appealing, like, by, like, they would cut down half of the lower portion of the graph and make it, like, interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, you would give less information than, like, what you should know, only to, like, convince you of whatever idea they want to convince you with, you know? That's the exact same thing I was saying earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, and in chapter 6, it's basically, I think it's connected with the previous chapter, because the focus of this chapter is, like one-dimensional picture, and, like, basically talking about graph or a table.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this chapter, the author, like, he points out, like, how the tricks are used to manipulate the report or give a desired direction and stuff like that.
Right. And then he goes to talk about, like, correlation and stuff.
Yeah. That's it.
Should we stop here?